Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Well, today we're diving into a topic that sounds more like science fiction than reality, but it is absolutely rooted in reality. Buckle your seatbelts, because this is a story I've wanted to do for a long time about remote viewing, from secret military operations during the Cold War to ongoing programs that currently exist right now inside the United States government and governments around the world, to classified briefings, the ability to perceive distant locations and events without being there physically, like being able to sit in a room thousands of miles away from a particular target and have a deep understanding about what is actually around that target. It's absolutely fascinating. One of the most compelling voices exploring these hidden realities is Jason Shurka. He's the author, researcher, founder of Unified TV Platform, where he explores ancient mysteries, spiritual awakenings, classified technologies. We've done a lot of deep dive discussions with Jason over the years about the pyramids and the secret hidden cities beneath the pyramids. We thought, who better than to come on to talk about the remote viewing program in history? Jason, welcome back to the show. Great to see you.
Thank you very much for having me, Clayton.
So I just want to start kind of at a high level. You know, I've been fascinated with this subject for years. I think going back to, I actually got this book, Tracks in the Psychic Wilderness by Dale Graff. Now, he was at a local Borders store. Remember the Bose Borders stores that closed down? I don't even think they exist anymore. But he was there doing a book signing in Reading, Pennsylvania, near where I grew up. And I went to see him when I was a child. I mean, he was really like a teenager. And I just sat fascinated. Here was a guy who was a part of Project Stargate. He was a part of the government's secret programs about remote viewing as part of the Air Force's Foreign Technology Division. So Project Stargate, actively working in remote viewing. So this wasn't some just random dude off the street. He was in the program. He wrote a book about it. He signed it for me. And that kind of started me on this journey of trying to understand, like, what is the government doing with these secret programs? So, Jason, maybe you could give me like a high-level overview of where, like, how did you come to start studying remote viewing, and what was your catalyst?
Yeah, so I would say much of like the same of what you experienced. As a kid, I was always fascinated by things that most people called science fiction. I was very fascinated with the stars, and I always wondered what else is out there. You know, what other life is out there? There's no way that we could be the only life here. Now, we can argue what other life may look like, how intelligent it is, whatever it may be, but just mathematically, statistically, that's kind of what got me going on, there must be something else out here. And that's what really got me to start focusing on all of these things that we're talking about now, because remote viewing is just one topic of many that connect a bunch of different disciplines together. And being that I come from not this world, the world that I come from is real estate, business. That's what my family does. That's what I do. It had nothing to do with anything I went to school for, but more so what I was really intrigued by, you know, what interested me. And I think people that are interested in something actually get further down the line than people that just study something, because there's this fascination and motivation that the person has to want to understand what's going on here. So that's really what got me to dive deeper into all of this. And a few personal experiences of connecting with certain remote viewers that, for example, the RCMP in Canada hires to find missing bodies when they have no other choice. That's like their last resort. So I worked with one woman, her name is Patricia, based out of Canada, and she found 31 missing bodies. And I put her on a few cases of my own to find money that my grandfather, who had Alzheimer's and couldn't remember where he put it, and then he died and we weren't sure where it went. And she found things that was just incredible, you know, things that not even we knew. So it may be in my nature, maybe because of my background, I always try to poke holes in things. How can you be wrong? How can this not be true? And if I try and poke a million holes and none of them are sticking, maybe there's a truth over here. That's really what got me to start on this journey of understanding and diving deeper into remote viewing and the implications of that and how that really impacts our world around us.
I spoke yesterday to Congressman Ron Paul, Dr. Ron Paul, and he said, Clayton, we spoke like 30 minutes, and he said, Clayton, he's like, I'm telling you, the U.S. dollar is collapsing. He said, well, we're not going to be having this conversation in 10 years. We're not going to be having the same conversation in 10 years. The U.S. dollar is on a path that is basically irretrievable at this point. And he's like, you know, he's like, I hope you're telling your audience, please make sure that they are investing in gold and silver, that they are owning precious metals, because the U.S. dollar is on an unsustainable path. The rise of the BRICS currencies, the amount of debt that the United States is sitting right now. This isn't a scare tactic. This is a wake up call. And the thing with like Congressman Ron Paul is that people like retroactively love to point, like they're like, hey, did you see what he said on the floor of Congress 10 years ago? And then it all came to pass. He sees it as unsustainable. I see it as unsustainable. So we are big believers. Please just get on the phone and give our friends at Lear Capital a phone call. Have a conversation with them. Talk to them about how you could actually start investing in precious metals in your family. Like if you've got U.S. dollars, you know, your family's future is tied to U.S. dollars. You've got a savings account. Have a conversation with them seriously about converting it maybe to a self-directed IRA where you can invest in actual tangible things, real estate, gold, silver, all of it. You can do that. But anyway, have a conversation with these guys. Stop sitting on your hands. I'm telling you that this is happening, and we've been trying to warn you about it. Congressman Ron Paul warning people about what's happening to the U.S. dollar. He said if you want to get a sort of a glimpse of what's going to happen to the U.S. dollar, look at Zimbabwe. If you want to understand how we go bankrupt, what happens to the devaluing of our currency? That's where we're headed right now. So anyway, give them a call, have a conversation with them, even if it's like a little bit in your, you know, in your portfolio that you're trying to protect your family with, converting U.S. dollars into gold or silver, just, you know, heck, even real estate at this point. Just be smart about it. 1-800-613-3557. Talk to them or go to LearRedacted.com. That's the place to go, LearRedacted.com.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
And I became fascinated once again. I've been reading books on remote viewing for years, but then to hear about what you and I talked about last year or earlier this year regarding the Giza Plateau and the massive sort of underground cities and structures there. I just spoke to a person recently who was a remote viewer who's been there multiple times. She herself has been underneath the pyramids. She's, you know, and she said just through remote viewing, it's very obvious how large the sort of underground cities and structures are underneath there. You know, she says every Egyptian knows about the massive structures underneath, the massive underground, you know, tunnel systems and everything underneath it. It's just kind of like been hidden to the rest. So that really kind of started me again thinking about remote viewing. And is it still alive? Like, is the government still using it? Is the CIA using it to look at targets in Iran or, you know, look at targets inside of Russia and coordinate with? I mean, are we still actively using these programs like we were under Project Stargate?
So interestingly enough, take Project Stargate, Project Sunstreak. Those are things that were declassified from, let's say, Sunstreak, the 90s, if I'm not mistaken, a few decades ago. So when they're doing certain operations now, they don't come out and say, hey guys, this is what we're doing, because they're classified. They usually come out 10, 15, 20 years later, sometimes 40 or 50 years later, and they become declassified. So what I can tell you on firsthand knowledge is I know people that work with certain programs today. I know them first today. Yeah. And I mean, even lower level programs like Patricia Mona. She could testify that on a firsthand basis. She works with the RCMP up until today to find missing bodies. The last case was like a year or two ago, if I'm not mistaken. So all of that is still actively going on today. The names of each operation and the details of each program, those are more classified information that will come out at some point in the future. But I mean, let's just use logic. If it was happening 30 years ago and they actually found some really important things, you were talking about the pyramids. We also spoke about the Ark of the Covenant. Now you're talking about the CIA. You're talking about some really big agencies and organizations out there that are using these people. So if they were using these people a couple decades ago on the record in declassified documents and they worked, why wouldn't they be using them today?
Right.
You know, it's exactly. Common sense.
It's common sense, right. It's just like it reminded me this week, over the past few weeks dealing with everything in Iran and, you know, the United States staged protests, overthrew the government in Iran back in, you know, the early 1950s, planted fake stories in the press, staged fake riots, and it worked. So this idea that, oh, they've given up that habit of using things that work to overthrow governments. And of course, they've been using it for decades after that, far more sophisticated now, using social media, using all sorts of cyber related things, fake social media accounts. So what worked in the 1950s and 60s probably is far more sophisticated now. But in the case of remote viewing, like at its essence, you really can't make it more sophisticated. Maybe you could give our viewers an understanding of exactly what remote viewing is and sort of its mechanics, because it's probably not going to change from the 1950s and 60s to now, right?
Yes and no. And I'll touch up on that. I just want to say something on a point that you brought up, because I think it's important how there are certain programs that are declassified and they say, you know, they ended and it's done and we don't do it anymore. One of those programs that isn't directly connected to remote viewing, but it's important for us to see certain themes with our government specifically and the Central Intelligence Agency specifically, is called MK Ultra. I'm sure you've heard of that one, right?
Of course, so, yeah.
MK Ultra, I mean, they're using drugs, they're using harmonics, they're using a lot of different testing to essentially control certain individuals through multiple different avenues. Now, on the record, MK Ultra was a project, and this is what they say, right? This is something you can even look up on Wikipedia. Not that I trust Wikipedia, but they're even telling you this in terms of what was declassified. I believe the dates were 1952 to 1973, about 21 years. They literally came out and said, the CIA came out and said and declassified, yes, we had a program called MK Ultra, and we were using drugs and sexual abuse and harmonics and a few different types of things to basically test subjects and see how we can control them for the purposes of understanding how to control individuals. Now, you can expand that into how do we control the masses. Now, they say formally that it ended in 1973. If you
That's
ask me. Yeah, I mean, it's continuing today. It may have evolved. Right now, they're using the mainstream media. They're using music tuned to certain hertz. So 440 hertz is your streamline of the frequency that they'll tune music to in the United States of America specifically. That's what record labels will use. And that was a harmonic and a frequency that was literally found in MK Ultra to help control the minds of their subjects. That's what I mean when I say they were using harmonics. So they use energy weapons, they use frequency, specific types to be able to control things, and so on and so forth. And I only bring that up before answering your question directly, because you brought up a good point. You know, they say, yeah, no, we don't do that anymore. We did in the 60s, but we don't do it anymore. And my argument is, no, they do it. They just changed the way that it's done, like slavery. Yeah, okay. Was slavery abolished in the way that it existed? Sure. But slavery still exists very, very much today, and it's done through our banking system. Right? It's loans and debt right. And the world. It's still slavery. It's just no longer black people. Now it's everybody. And it's chaining you not through whips and chains physically, but through whips and chains through the banking industry and finances and so on and so forth. So all of these things that they say ended never ended. They just evolved, and they have this common theme of evolving in a way that actually takes advantage of more people than it did in the past, like slavery. It used to be one race specifically. Now it's everybody across the board in many different ways. So I just wanted to address that. But if you don't want,
it's a great point. It's an important point. And I will say on the record, I've recently, as far as you know, just a few weeks ago, spoken to sources who were a part of the MKUltra program, who basically escaped from it. Yep. They've had their lives ruined as a result of it. The horror stories that I've heard from these sources is jaw-dropping. The conversations that I've had and the stories that I've heard, it boggles the mind. So these programs have not gone away. I mean, I'm talking like related to like child trafficking, yes, all pieces of this, you know.
With like very high-end politicians, you know, you were talking about some really big names that are a part of this. And I think to their luck, they're so mind-boggling that they don't even bother to defend it because they're like, that's just so crazy. Nobody's going to believe it. And they got away with that for quite some time.
Yeah. And they're still getting away with it as we speak. So you're right about that. It continues. These programs continue. So I think we set that as sort of a baseline that these things are currently happening right now. There are remote viewers working for the U.S. government. They're working in other governments. They're looking at targets underground, you know, in outer space. So how exactly does remote viewing work? Maybe you could take us sort of into the program, if you would.
Yeah, so I'm going to try to do this as grounded as possible, because if you just say what it is, it sounds crazy. But if you make some sense out of it, I think my goal is always to be the bridge between the common person and the crazy person, try to find the middle ground of how does all of this make sense. So in essence, the bottom line is remote viewing is the ability to project one's consciousness to a specific geographical location or to specific coordinates. Now, people hear that and they're like, what are you talking about? That sounds woo-woo. It sounds spiritual. How is that science-backed? So there is a difference between remote viewing and what some people call an out-of-body experience. Now, some people hear out-of-body experience, and again, they say, that's not possible. What are you talking about? And the prime example that I'll give for everybody to be able to relate to this is when you're dreaming. And I don't know if this has ever happened to you, Clayton, but have you ever had an experience where you had a dream of something that almost like gave you information on something real, or you dreamt of something before it happened? It was like deja vu. Has that ever happened to you?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. I have an awareness about, yeah.
Yeah, there's something that happens in the dream state. And I want to speak about the dream state, not that dreaming and remote viewing are the same thing, but in terms of the mechanism, it's important to understand. So people say when you're dreaming, you're asleep. I would say something different. When you're dreaming, you're awake in a different way. And you're awake in a different way because it's not like, you know, your heart shuts down, your brain shuts down, and nothing happens. What happens scientifically is your brain waves, your frequencies that your brain is operating on are changing. So when you're in like your day-to-day, you're operating at alpha, sometimes beta. And the level of frequencies from lowest to highest would be beta, alpha, theta, delta, gamma. And everything I'm sharing here is pure science. It's something that you can connect somebody to an EKG and measure these different frequencies. So we'll focus on those five. There are certain things that, for example, if I said, Clayton, can you move your eyes at like 100 movements per second right now? And your answer would be no.
No.
But guess what? You do that every single night when you sleep. It's called rapid eye movement. So why are you able to do something, REM, the REM cycle? Why are you able to do that while you're asleep, while you're not able to do that while you're awake? And the answer is because when you're asleep, you're awake in a different way. You're operating on a different frequency. So you're closer to theta. And in theta, you're able to do that. In delta, you're able to do that, the rapid eye movement. So what that shows us, if you read between the lines, is there are things that we call supernatural that are not supernatural. The only thing that's necessary to do to make it possible is to change the frequency that your brain is operating at. Now, we do that naturally while we're sleeping because we go through the REM cycle and we move from alpha into theta and delta and gamma sometimes. But that's what's really needed to be done. And I preface with that to ground it somewhat into reality to show that just like you need to change a frequency in the brain to be able to do something that was impossible when you were in alpha or beta, the same thing goes with remote viewing. If you want to have the ability to project your consciousness and control it to such a level where you can actually remember what's going on and what you're seeing in certain places around the world, unconscious is not what you need. You need to be so aware while being in a higher state or a different frequency in terms of what your brain waves are operating at. So essentially what remote viewing is changing the vibration or the frequency, quite literally, that the brain is operating at to give the ability to do what we once called impossible or supernatural, which is basically projecting the awareness of the individual from this body and only this body to be able to seeing something over there.
And in the books that I've read about this over the years, these are like military guys. These are like no nonsense. Like, these aren't like hippies who are in these programs. One of the most interesting things that I found, and you can take this further than what I can talk about, but is that this isn't like the difference between using like a psychic. You know, you see like these psychics on television and so forth, which also have incredible abilities, but this is different than psychic powers. This is really totally different. And from the research that I've read on this, they actually don't want psychics involved in the remote viewing program. They actually find that it kind of inhibits their ability for remote viewing. And most of the people in the remote viewing program are kind of just like by the book, no nonsense military types. Am I wrong about that?
So sometimes they get the hippie and they train them properly if they have the proper abilities. But I'll give you a real place in Virginia, not far from the CIA headquarters, by the way, where they literally teach them. The place is called the Monroe Institute. You could look it up. Monroe, the Monroe Institute. Now, me and you can go and actually pay for a week to go and learn things there. But I could tell you that that's where they literally send their CIA operatives that they want to teach them how to do certain things to be able to use them in programs. It's the Monroe Institute. And one of the guys behind that wrote a book a few decades ago. His name is William something. I don't know how to, I don't remember his last name. It's something that I can't pronounce either. But this guy, William, wrote a book called Adventures Beyond the Body. And he's directly connected to the Monroe Institute. So that's actually where I learned about the Monroe Institute. I haven't been there myself, not yet at least, but I've spoken to many individuals that have practiced over there. And they all say the same thing. We've met a lot of operatives from the CIA that in some cases weren't even allowed to tell us who they were. But in this case, there were some attractive women that were going there and they liked them and they kind of released some information, classified information that they just shared with them.
Yeah, so these are, like, you can actually be trained to do this. I think that's another sort of stunning piece of this is that pretty much all of us have this ability if we go through the proper training. Is that right?
Yes. In theory, yes. But there are certain things that are very important to remember. Now, think about it like this. And I'm going to go a little bit to the metaphysical side for a second, but I'll ground it right back. We all come to this world, however you want to call it, right? Doesn't matter. But we all come to this world with certain gifts. Some people have a gift in doing what you do, right? Media, communication, so on and so forth. Other people are horrible at that, but they have a gift in mathematics. And other people have a gift in something else. Everybody comes with a different gift. Now, if your potential is more inclined towards things like what we're talking about here, it will be easier for you to be able to access something like that. And those are the people that organizations or agencies like the CIA will go and target, the people that are easiest to be able to train and get to that point. However, even if somebody is very, very far from it, it doesn't mean they can't get to it, but there are certain procedures that one would have to go through. For example, if you're eating a lot of dirty food and drinking a lot of alcohol and doing a lot of drugs, think what happens at that point. It lowers the level of energy in your body. It will lead you to sickness eventually, and it will also inhibit the ability to access certain gifts that you may or may not have. In essence, the cleaner the body is, the easier it is to do things like that. The same reason why when you're on a fast, you remember your dreams a lot more. You have a lot more mental clarity when you're fasting for a few days than after a meal at McDonald's and, you know, a pint of Coca-Cola or whatever it is, and then you go to sleep. You're more likely to remember your dreams because you have a more expanded and uninhibited awareness when your body is cleaner. And that's part of the things that are very important when going down this route.
That's fascinating. It makes sense. I mean, how you if you have alcohol, you do not get a proper night's sleep. I mean, people are like, no, I'm good. I can just have one drink and I get a good night's sleep. No, you don't. You never actually hit that REM sleep level, even with like one drink, I think, right? I mean, I'm not an alcohol expert. I enjoy it from time to time, but I think you mess up your sleep patterns with that kind of behavior, right?
What you're really messing up when you want to, again, go back to the science behind it, is the ability to manipulate and access brainwave patterns. That's, if you want to look at it from like empirical evidence without just words, that's what's going on. So if you're going to, you know, do a line of Coke and drink Coca-Cola and eat McDonald's, your ability to do something like that will be inhibited. And that's what's necessary to do what we're talking about. Now, that's not to say that somebody that's not clean can't do this. What I am saying is, as a generalization, the cleaner you are, the easier it is to do.
So I've learned through these programs where they're training these individuals, they'll have a room of like 15, 20 people, and they take them through sort of specific, and it can be like multiple hours at a time. Can you walk through exactly what they're doing sort of maybe in this training, and how, you know, are they sitting there sort of in a Zen state, closing their eyes, and what are they given? Like, I'm just curious sort of the mechanics of it. Like, if they're trying to find nuclear weapons in Iran, you know, at a specific location that they can't get into, it's a secure facility or something, or in North Korea or whatever, or looking for bodies, you know, missing bodies in a particular area. And I know this is part of the training. Like, what are the mechanics of how are they sitting in this room, and what exactly are they doing?
Think about it like riding a bike when you don't know how to ride a bike. The first thing you're going to do, unless you're some brilliant genius that was gifted that can just get on a bike and everything's great, that doesn't usually happen. So for the common person that's going to be trained through something like this, it would start with training wheels, and eventually the bike would get bigger, and eventually it would get faster, and so on and so forth. So what does that look like in translation for what you're talking about? From what I have seen, and from what I was taught, from what I've been through myself, not that I'm an expert remote viewer myself, but from what I've seen with my own experiences and research, the first few things have a lot to do with visualization practices and repetitive word practices. Because remember, on the level of frequencies, now going back to the science, if you're intending to shift a specific frequency from one brainwave to another, using sound may help you do that. So there are repetitive sounds that you can do over and over again, which are frequencies that will help create the shift that one is looking for. But before we even go to that part, visualization is a very big piece of it. So I'll give you one practice, for example. You visualize, and I'm going to paraphrase a longer practice, but this was one that I actually went through myself, and it worked because I've gotten to experience this to a low level before. My life was just sidetracked with work and a bunch of other things, and at some point I hope to get deeper into it. But from what I can tell you on a firsthand basis, one of the practices is envision a room that you know everything about, like a room that you know every single little part of that room, what's in this corner, what's on this windowsill, all the way to every little detail. And you'll close your eyes and you'll envision yourself in that room over a period of, for me, it took about 10 to 15 minutes, but I had to practice it for a couple of weeks to get to the point of what I'm going to share with you. This happened to me about 5 years ago, and I was in Vietnam when it happened. Not that Vietnam had anything to do with it, but that's where it happened. And you visualize this room and you start walking around it, looking at every single little detail while going and saying certain, you can call them mantras or affirmations or whatever it may be. The one that I was doing was, I am out of body. Now, at first I'm like, what the hell is this? This sounds crazy, but you know what? Let me go in with an open mind, see what happens. And I can tell you on a firsthand level, on a firsthand basis, what happened. And I'm no expert, and it happened, to show you how relatable it is. And if somebody really puts their mind to this, you don't need to go to school for 20 years to learn something like this. Over a period of two weeks in of doing that practice, there was one night where what I felt was, imagine a very, very loud noise, almost like a vibrational loud noise, a very loud noise. But it's not happening outside of you. It's literally happening in your own mind. It's weird. But you feel it and you hear it. And part of the practice was, don't get scared if and when you hear that. Embrace it and keep moving forward. And whatever happened and how it happened, I can't tell you the mechanism from a scientific perspective, but I could tell you what I literally experienced by doing that. I embraced the very, very loud sounds. And there was almost like a separation in a way. I felt a lot lighter, but there was no body associated with it. It was just a feeling of, I am aware. I saw the room that I was in. It was a hotel room in Vietnam, in Ho Chi Minh City or wherever it was. And I saw my cousin that was sleeping next to me in the next bed. And I'm looking and I'm realizing, this isn't my body. What's going on? How is this possible? And the second I thought that, I snapped right back in and it stopped. One of the keys of being able to do something like this is not being afraid and not doubting it when it happens. Otherwise, it brings you right back into the experience of the physical body. Now, I experienced that myself. I saw that myself, and it was one of the craziest experiences of my life. Now, that is the kindergarten part of it. When you go through a process like this in the Monroe Institute, for example, they're going to start with not, you know, go to China and find something, but we're going to put something in the room next door. And your job is to go and find a way to get there through X, Y, and Z, which are the mechanisms that they would teach you of how to do it. Meaning it would start by doing something very close to you, training wheels, getting you through that part. And as you become better and more evolved with it, eventually you'll leave the building, and eventually you'll leave the town, and eventually you'll leave the country, and so on and so forth. That's the process by which you would start, where somebody that doesn't know what they're doing would start with, and eventually, if they keep going in the proper direction, end at being able to go into this, call it like a meditative state, if you will, because the difference between dreaming and meditation is not that different. It's the same mechanism. You're changing the frequencies or the brain waves that you're operating on to be able to do things and see things. So that's the very paraphrased big picture process and some of my own experiences that I got to see.
That's incredible. I know after reading these books, and I'm like, I want to try this. You know, I'm open. I'm as open as they come. So I would love to try this sort of training to go through it. One of the things that I found fascinating in this research is that you need the, you got to verify, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's one thing to have people in a room saying that they're seeing some sort of a structure under the ground in a particular mountainside, or they're trying to find a body near an electrical pole, near a lake, near some sort of a tire, you know, like a garage or something like that with barrels or something like that, right? You need to be able to verify it. And I think that's one of the big pieces of this remote viewing. It's not just, this is what I saw. We need boots on the ground, right?
I think one of the biggest issues that we're dealing with today are resistance points, is the fact that because it's getting more popular, every Joe Schmo wants to be able to do something with it. And the same problem with psychics. There are some that are really good, but in my experience, 95% of them are not the real deal. And that dilutes the 5% that are, and it's a shame, because now you have a group of many, many individuals trying to do something, not for bad purposes, but trying to do something, or, you know, saying that they see something and they might not. And if they're wrong, it suddenly ruins it for the entire group. And I think that we as human beings need to be smart enough to filter between the correct and the incorrect, the good and the bad, and so on and so forth. And if we see somebody that claims to be a part of a group of people that can do something, and they turn out not to be the real deal, it doesn't mean that everybody else is not the real deal. It just means that there are certain people that are making claims that aren't true. And that's going to happen more and more and more as we keep going down these really weird metaphysical paths of investigation, in some aspects journalism as well. So one of the biggest things over here is it's not black and white, and it's not all or nothing. And even the people that are great and have a track record of finding 31 bodies may also be wrong sometimes. And it doesn't mean that they're wrong all of the time, and it doesn't mean they're right all of the time. It just means, like everything else, every device and every form of technology, like the weather, right? We give a lot of power to the Weather Channel, and yet they're wrong 50% of the time. So we got to keep that in mind, right? Where just because you're wrong a percentage of the time, if you have a majority of the time where you're doing some incredible things, instead of denouncing the parts that are wrong and saying it's all nonsense, let's try and double down on the parts that were right and understand, how do we replicate being accurate every single time? And if we have more people going down that route, instead of more people trying discrediting it because they can't quite understand the mechanism by which it works in a very linear way, because it's not linear, the more people that will go with an open mind, not in a reckless way, but in a way of just saying, listen, We see that there are people that are able to do this thing. We don't completely understand it. Let's dive deeper, because if we can replicate this 100% of the time, I mean, everything's going to change in this world. But it does require a very big shift of consciousness in terms of what we as a collective of human beings are able to accept and understand. And I think the ego part of us that likes closure, that wants to know everything, is very uncomfortable with things that we don't know 100%. And I think we're better, what I'm seeing, what my opinion on the matter is, we are more comfortable knowing something or feeling that we know something, even if we're wrong, than not knowing something and going to investigate it, because it's this uncomfortable feeling of, I don't know, that's dangerous to me because I don't have any closure. And I think that's a theme that we've been seeing in many parts of the world with religion and many, many other things. It's about closure, to give an absolute story of, this is exactly what happened, and that's what makes people feel good. And I think that's dangerous.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe we can talk about some of the maybe discoveries or what we know about that have, where remote viewing was the tool, the mechanism to find it. You talked about 31 bodies with this Patricia in Canada. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, just when we talk about like the pyramids or other locations or even military discoveries as a result of, or even in outer space. So feel free to, you can go all the way to Mars if you want to. Just curious. You know, remote viewing being used to look at some of these targets, what has fascinated you?
I think the Ark of the Covenant one was really interesting, because they're no longer, when I say they, I'm talking about authorities, agencies, so on and so forth, mainstream media, they're no longer saying it doesn't exist. There was a declassified, and we spoke about this in the past, there was a declassified program called Project Sunstreak. It was in the 90s, if I'm not mistaken. I don't remember the date off the top of my head, but a few decades ago. And they used, 30, 40, 50 different subjects in this case, remote viewers. So not one or two crazy people, but a lot of people at the same time that all came with the same exact analysis and conclusion at the end. And all they were given were coordinates. They were given coordinates without telling them exactly what they're looking for. Now, a skeptic can argue, okay, maybe they Googled those coordinates on Google Maps, and they saw that it was the Dome of the Rock in Jerusalem, and they came up with a story. That's possible. But when you separate all these people and they all come back with not just, yeah, this is the Dome of the Rock, but what they found there, because they didn't say, hey guys, we're looking for the Ark of the Covenant. This is what it looks like. Can you tell us if it's here? That would be easy to say, this is a bunch of nonsense. They just said, here are the coordinates, tell us what you see. And even if they did Google it, because we got to go to the skeptic mind, I do that all the time. Even if they did Google it, all the 50 in separate rooms, which is highly improbable, but let's say they did, and they said, okay, we're looking at the Dome of the Rock, how did they all come back with the same conclusion? And that conclusion
was,
and I'll paraphrase, that conclusion was deep underground, about 100 and something feet under the foundation stone, which is basically what the Dome of the Rock is built around today. So today it's a Muslim mosque. Back in the day, like 3,000 years ago, it was the holy temple of the Jewish people. And before then, there was no religion associated with it. It was just a powerful point on earth. So basically all of them came back and said, we see certain things buried about 100 and something feet underneath this dome and the foundation stone. And it looks like a coffin that's made of some type of wood. And I don't remember the type of wood that they said, but they identified the type of wood. Many of them that didn't speak of each other said the same type of wood. And it has gold on it, and it has these things that are called seraphim on it, that are basically meant to represent angels, but they had like lion or eagle's heads. And they all said it's a religious object that has some sort of spiritual protection that we don't really understand. And anybody that goes and touches it or tries to open it will cease to exist, meaning they will die. Now, if you look at the Ark of the Covenant, that's exactly what the story says. It says that it is this wooden-like coffin-looking thing with gold on it that has the seraphim on it with a few other objects around it. And if the wrong person goes to try and touch it or open it, they will essentially go up in flames. So you're taking 50 different people, part of a classified CIA project called Project Sunstreak. So it's not some woo-woo organization, it's the CIA themselves. And they're all saying the same exact thing on what they found with the Ark of the Covenant, without anybody telling them we're looking for this thing, but just giving them the longitude and latitude coordinates. That to me, I mean, there are many examples like this, but that to me is something that's irrefutable. And I'll give you a without going to declassified documents, because I'm one, I always say, you know, how do we know that that's true? How do we know the CIA isn't messing with us? How do we know there aren't different motives over there and they're trying to lie to distract? We don't, but I can give you a firsthand example of that same exact thing. Before these documents came out and before the story came out with the declassified documents, 5 years ago, me and you a few months ago spoke about that pyramid code document that was given to me. And it speaks about these things buried underneath the Dome of the Rock. And it says exactly what they are. And again, I don't remember all of them off the top of my head, but one of them is the Ark of the Covenant, coupled with a few different artifacts from thousands and thousands of years ago that were buried there. So 5 years ago, I was much younger. Today, I'm going to be 28 tomorrow. I was 22 or 23 at the time. So I came out with a baby. Still a baby, but definitely a baby then. And I'm looking and I'm like, I wanted to get onto this really big media outlet that I don't want to say the name of here because they did something and I'll tell you what they did, but I don't know if they want me to share it. I wanted to get onto this really big media outlet and I gave them the story and they accepted it and they said, let's do it. And I called the producer and I said, listen, thank you for giving me the opportunity, but I got to ask you, how do you know I'm not lying? Like, what I'm saying here is crazy. What this document says here is crazy. What gives you the confidence of bringing me onto your really big show that a lot of people watch without you looking crazy? And that's how I met Patricia in Canada. He said, I called a friend of mine who's a very, very good remote viewer in Canada. And I gave her the coordinates of where this document says certain things are buried. And he said, I didn't give her the list of what was buried under there. I kept the list to myself and I told her to come back and tell me what she sees. And she came back with the list. So that's how I ended up meeting Patricia in Canada. She was the one that validated it for that big media channel and those producers. And that's the reason why they brought me on, because they did their own form of like two-factor authentication verification. That's why they ended up bringing me on, because I asked in all honesty, like, how do you guys know what I'm saying is true? Like, I stand behind it, but why do you stand behind it? And it all connected back to Patricia, the remote viewer. That's how me and her ended up being friends. That's how I ended up calling her about my grandfather with Alzheimer's, with the money that he hid. That's how I found out about the 31 bodies with the RCMP. She still does that work till today. She's somebody that you can connect with, by the way. She's really good at what she does.
Oh, I'd love to. That's fascinating. So they were able to, before we even learned about the declassification from the CIA, you had already gotten access to this, and then here they are trusting but verifying what's actually happening at these coordinates. That's remarkable. What do you hope? I mean, you know, I'll get you out of here on this, Jason. I mean, what do you hope that we could use remote viewing to get answers for in the future? Like, what are some big, if you had to pick like one or two or maybe three things that you hope that maybe a remote viewing program could really point us to, whether it's on Earth or even, you know, at a moon base, perhaps, you know, I mean, what stands out to you?
Well, I think remote viewing is just the tip of the iceberg. And I know a lot of people focus on it, but the more they go into that, the more a lot of people are going to start learning a lot of other things. There is remote viewing. There is the ability to do something called an out-of-body experience, which many people experience through NDEs, which are near-death experiences. And they all have the same story too, from all around the world, where it's like something, this awareness is leaving their body and they see their body and then they come back and they all have the same feeling and see the same thing. So what I hope to come out of remote viewing itself is not just directly connected to remote viewing, but what actually comes out of the acceptance of something like that. And that's a world where people learn to trust their intuition a little bit more. People understand that just intuition is not enough. You need the mind and logic associated and connected to that as well to be able to verify. Otherwise, things become dangerous. I remote viewing is something that's done today. It's going to be done for a very long time. But I do believe that it will continuously evolve because of what you said in the beginning of, like, is it the same thing from the 60s and the 70s? And yes and no, because the updated version of remote viewing is an out-of-body experience. And an out-of-body experience gives you a little bit more domain and understanding and capabilities of certain things that you're able to do and see and feel and understand, because that's an even higher frequency or brainwave that you're operating at. Call it from theta to gamma, where gamma will give you a lot more abilities to see certain things. What I hope is that people start understanding that what we call supernatural is not supernatural, but we are simply living subnatural lives right now. And the fact that we look at birds, and birds don't have navigational tools in terms of physical technology, but they know exactly where to go and how to do it. And when there's a hurricane or a storm coming 500 miles ahead, they go around it. And they didn't have a weatherman to tell them that. That means birds are able to, and animals in general, are able to connect in such a way where they can feel certain things in ways that we necessarily can't right now, but we could if we open our minds and we clean our bodies. So long as we're living in a world, and I always bring it back to this, if we're living in a world with poison in our food, and there is poison in our food and toxins in our food and toxins and pollutants in our water, and we're wearing clothes that are made of toxic chemicals, and we're breathing air that is full of pollutants, and we're doing things that are not good for the body, that directly impacts and impedes our ability to be more intuitive. It completely impacts our ability to feel things that we would be able to feel if we were more clear in the body and in the mind. And the answer to that is not about politics. It's not about, you know, let's kill these people and let's go to war and this country needs to take over. That's unfortunately the consequence of a polluted mind that I hope we can start to solve by getting people to understand and see beyond all the garbage that's going on in the world. Because if we focus on only the politics and only the wars, we're not fixing the problem. We're perpetuating it. We're propelling it forward. And I'm not saying that it's not important to understand what's going on in the world today. It's extremely important. But it's also important to understand the bigger picture of why we're here. We're not here to fight. We're not here to kill. We're not here to do any of those things. In my opinion, we're here to give. We're here to help. We're here to live a good life, to live a peaceful life. And a world that accepts things like remote viewing, a world that starts to, instead of denounce things like out-of-body experiences, start studying things like that and understand how something like that is possible to help other people experience things like that, is a world that I think we want to live in. Because that's a world where people will be more aware of their surroundings. It's a world where when somebody on the other side of the planet is in poverty or, you know, is experiencing malnutrition or whatever it may be, take Africa as a perfect example in certain parts of it. We in America just sit here and we don't really think about that. And we don't think about that because we're numb to the fact that we're all connected. We're numb to the that somebody else somewhere else is in pain. And in my opinion, it's no different than you have a body made of billions and billions and billions of cells. And if one or two cells are not doing well and you don't take care of those cells, that's eventually going to turn into cancer and it's going to impact the entire body. And the collective truth on this planet is no different. If we don't take care of, we see everything in terms of like, our country first. And yes, that's true also. But we need to come to a world, and right now I don't think it's going to happen. We need to come to a world where we really do help each other, where regardless of what passport you have, regardless of what religion you practice, regardless of the culture that you're going to, you know, associate with or whatever it is, we're still all human beings. I cut your arm, you're still going to have red blood coming out. And that is the world that I think we need to move forward with. And that is the world that will accept things like studying remote viewing as more of a science. And we do it. We just do it in a classified manner. What happens when people start waking up and saying, you know what, let's take some more power into our own hands. Let's understand how we can all become our own version of superhumans instead of, you know, counting on this person, the classified project that's only going to be known in the next 30 years. That hinders our growth. We are capable people. We could do incredible things. Step one, heal the body, clean the world. Be aware of even your enemies. I'm not saying go and give them flowers, but try to stop as many problems or wars as you see in this world, because it comes from a place that's only going to perpetuate more of that. And if we can put the egos down and we start to say, you know what, why are we all here? Do we really want to live our entire lives in war, because that's our entire history? It's always war. Or do we want to live our lives in a better way, put our differences aside and start honoring them? That's a world that will accept remote viewing more, that will accept out-of-body experiences more, that will be more of a spiritually oriented world while being rooted in science, because there is no difference between spirituality and science. There is simply a gap that's an illusion that's created because our awareness is limited in terms of how certain things work. And if we become curious, instead of denouncing, this is impossible, but we become curious and ask, how is this possible? That will bring us to a beautiful place. And that's what I aim to do in this world.
I love it. I love it. You know, there's some dark forces that are trying to poison us, have us connected and always online and focused on social media and be, you know, and really lower our awareness about all of this. But I think you're right. If we can actually move towards, you know, to in this direction, we could really change the world if we had that, if we had that awareness. Jason, where can people learn more about your work if they want to tap into what you're researching and working on?
Absolutely. So actually, on this topic specifically, in terms of becoming superhuman, there's a really big event that I'm going to be hosting in Miami in January of 2026. And you can learn more about that on my website, jasonshurka.com. It's called Becoming Superhuman. And it's really, really awesome with a lot of the work that we just spoke about and a whole lot more to help people tap into that power within themselves. It's a 3-day event. It's going to be very exciting. Beyond that, you can go to unified.tv. And that's a really awesome platform that you spoke about in the beginning. But everything from remote viewing to investigative journalism behind the corruption behind what's going on in Disney, all the way to corruption in the CIA, to many, many different things with people like James O'Keefe on the ground, where we funded an exclusive show that he has exclusively on Unified TV. That's where you can find a lot of that stuff. And I mean, the topics covered on that platform are awesome. And it's pretty eye-opening. So long as you have somewhat of an open mind and start using that as a seed to dive deeper into what's going on around the world. So Unified TV is the main platform, and jasonshurka.com, my website, is where people can learn about that event, to learn all about what we spoke about today and a whole lot more. The event's called Becoming Superhuman with myself and Dr. Brian Artis.
Wonderful. My guest has been Jason Shurka. Great to see you, Jason.
Thank you.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.